Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show with Mark Scowron on outsourcing your wholesale real estate business. I'm Dan Breslin, host of the REI Diamond Show. Today, I am interviewing a fellow Chicagoland wholesaler, fix and flip, and landlord, also a friend of mine, Mark Scowron. Mark has been wholesaling and flipping deals for a while, and I'm sure many of our Chicago listeners already know Mark, but for those listening who do not, you'll want to stay tuned. We are going to dig deep into Mark's wholesaling business, which is currently doing about 8 to 12 deals per month. He does almost every one of his deals without ever talking to the seller or actually visiting the property. Oh, now that I say that, I realize that's how I do my deals, but he is getting it done in a slightly different method than my team and I. The major difference being that someone on my team almost always physically inspects the house and meets the seller on every deal I do. You probably figured out by now that this episode is primarily focused on wholesaling houses. So if you're already wholesaling or want to start wholesaling or are just plain interested in knowing how wholesalers find all these great deals, you'll want to sit back now and enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Mark. Good to have you here.
Awesome, Dan. Thank you for having me, man. Appreciate it.
So I guess a lot of the people here in Chicago market probably know who you are, but we have a national audience. So for those listening who might not know who Mark Scowron is, want to give a little bit of a background on you and kind of what your business looks like today in real estate?
Yeah, certainly. So born and raised in Chicago, lifelong here. Yeah, I got in the business probably about 5 years ago now. Started out kind of part-time, been full-time the last 4 years really now. So started out with wholesaling, you know, kind of learn the ropes that way. I think that's probably the best way to learn the business, to get into business. So I did wholesaling, got into some rehabs, some rentals, kind of just climbed up the ladder as far as just, you know, all about growth and learning new strategies and whatnot. Made a ton of mistakes, right? I think that's the thing that people got to realize. Don't worry about making mistakes. Actually, in essence, mistakes are awesome because it's feedback, you know, don't do this, go this way. And yeah, so we get to the point now where I've got an acquisition guy, disposition guy, or acquisition lady, I'm sorry, and a disposition guy, and then a VA. So we'll do about 6 to 10, 6 to 12 sometimes transactions here, whether it's wholesale, or rehabs that are going on. So my story, like, just to reverse it, really what I realized in my business, you know, when I was starting out, like what I did is I bought 1,000 bandit signs, right, and just put them up everywhere, just littered them. So calls came in, and just so for me starting out, I got every property that I could under contract, right? And I think, you know, it's good and bad, right? Good and bad. I mean, bad because I was getting everything, even in the hood, under contract. That just, you know, whatever the seller said, I'll accept this. I was like, sure, let's do it. And maybe it's not the best thing, but it is. It's educational because it really forces you to learn, you know, what to say to the sellers and how you can really. So I think, so that's the most important thing to learn. I think people listening on this, like, listen, you can learn wholesaling, right? It's easy. Easy in the sense of simple, not easy, but hey, find a motivated seller, put it under contract. I think the missing piece oftentimes is, all right, how to like connect with your seller, how to connect with your audience, how to negotiate, how to be a human being, right? How to get them to engage, how you can engage, how to put out a fire when it comes out and still have the seller trust you and be on your side after what, you know, someone steals a key in a lockbox or something like that. So I think those are really the most important things that kind of I've mastered. And I think that's always left out, you know, a lot of like the wholesale trainings, right? Find a property, get under contract, you know, this and this. I think you still got to do the fundamentals, but really I think how you can differentiate yourself is really, you know, how to engage, how to get the other person to engage, how to connect, right? You know, I always tell like my acquisition lady, she's really good at it, right? I think for like the acquisition side, it's really good instead of being like a sales approach and talking 90% of the time, listen 90% of the time, treat them like, you know, like your best friends, like a long lost, like, hey, Dan, what's going on, man? How can I help you? And kind of keep it in that relationship and communication, you know? So that's what I kind of mastered. I realized back to that story, right? I got every property that I could under contract, and then I had to go back to the sellers and say, sorry, it's not priced right, or I'm going to have to back out. And I realized the reason why I did that is because I didn't have a good buyer. So I didn't really have any buyers. So for me, I just really, I was hell bent on, you know, calling 200 a day. just finding every cash buyer that I could in every segment, right? The rehabbers, landlords, you know, north area, south area here in Chicago. So that's my spiel, right? I got into it, got a bunch of properties under contract, realized I couldn't move them, realized that even properties in the hood or properties on main streets, even those properties eventually will sell. So I kind of realized it's all about the buyers, right? Like, it's really all about the buyers. Like, no one's ever walked up to you and said, hey, Dan, I'm going out of business. I have too many buyers in my business. You know, like, think how awkward that sounds. No one's going to say that. But so that was the key point for me, you know, kind of transferring, shifting my gear into digging your well before it's thirsty, in other words.
Yeah, you bring up a couple great points there, Mark. I have a feeling most of our conversation here will be somewhat focused in the wholesale thing, because a lot of people who are getting started and people see us, you know, sending out the emails, you, me, separately throughout the country. A big mistake for a lot of new investors who are, I don't know if it was a mistake or maybe it turned out to be a good thing, but signing up everything in your path at whatever number you could basically get them at. And I see a lot of newer wholesalers, like, they'll sign up stuff that the numbers just don't make sense. They're too high priced. You know, they're not based on the reality of the market. They're just based on kind of what the seller would accept. And I know that I've helped a lot of newer wholesalers out myself, like in referral situations where maybe I'm buying a property and I tell them, hey, listen, man, I'll give you, you know, $38,000. Get it for whatever you can get it underneath of the 38. Or maybe it's a neighborhood I won't buy in. I'll tell them, look, I know I got a guy who will take it for $55,000. So why don't you go in there and get it for, you know, $35,000, $37,000, $40,000, and then we can kind of split the fee. And so, like, I noticed that a lot of newer wholesalers in that situation have had a lot of luck dealing with somebody experienced, probably like you or me, who then could step in and tell them the right number and tell them to take a pass on certain deals and kind of avoid some of that aggravation. Do you get into any of that with the referral people, kind of helping people out, or is that something you haven't really explored?
Yeah, no, that's huge. I think, Dan, that's a great point, because so I think it's, you know, so if you're at that point, right, if you're starting out and you're just like, hey, I'm just going to dial in and get everything I can under contract, that's not a bad thing, right? I mean, I think it's a good, like, learner. It's a good experience learner. But the key, what you said there is like, hey, we got to be, I know I have a buyer at 55, so get this at 38, 40, whatever it is, right? So knowing, so if that wholesaler goes out and he's like just guessing, right, like, I guess I'll get it at 45. I don't really know what's going to happen. Or even if the seller says 60, yeah, sure, let's do it. So that's not as ideal as having someone like you saying, hey, Mr. Wholesaler, you know, Mr. Partner, we got to be at 55, or I can move this at 55, we got to be at 40. So then it gives them confidence and they know the area. And then it's way easier to work once you know your buyer's criteria, right? So whether they're leveraging your buyer or if they have their own, but however you do it, knowing what your buyer, where they're at, where they're going to pay, it gives you so much confidence in closing the deal with the seller, right? Because you know, hey, I got two buyers that'll take it at 60, so I know I can negotiate this guy to 40 or less or more, whatever it is, right? But I'm telling you, that's huge when you're starting out, because I think you make a lot of errors, then you got to mumbo jumbo, you got to go back to the seller and tell him why you couldn't sell it.
You mentioned another thing too, it's like leverage your buyer. I know when I got into business, I kind of sold my first deal on Craigslist. I leveraged another buyer, another investor's friend bought my second deal. So it was kind of, I didn't have the buyer's list either. And it's like, looking back, I kind of wish I had somebody, you know, like you, like me, like somebody other, you know, Russell Walker in this market who had big buyer's lists. I mean, I got like 10,000, 15,000 buyers in Atlanta alone, you know, 10, 11,000 in Philadelphia. So like, man, I pump out a deal that's like, you know, reasonably profitable. It doesn't even have to be like a grand slam home run. It just has to be reasonably profitable and the deal is going to move. And so a lot of times, you know, for the newer people, if you can align with somebody trustworthy and then, you know, leverage that buyer's list too, I think that's going to be like real critical to hit the ground running.
Yeah. Like, leverage our buyer's list, right? So like we do, you do, you know, you've got your guys that you work with. I do a lot of co-wholesale and, you know, some guys in other markets, right? So they don't have a strong buyer's list. So I say, hey, man, just tell me what you got. You know, we'll move it. You know, I got a deep buyers list here too in every segment, right? You know, it's all about, you know, the rehabbers, the builders, developers, turnkey guys, south side, you know, two flat, single family, whatever it is. So I think that helps them a lot because they could just focus on the acquisition side and then we'll worry about, hey, well, I'll get rid of this for you in an email blast, you know?
Yeah, so I've been in business like 10 years. The first five, I was kind of scrapping around. The market crashed, you know, I wasn't ready, so I kind of failed for a while. You know, I had some early success, and then I had some early failure there in those first couple years, and to the point where, like, everybody was getting out of the business, and it was kind of hard-headed, you know, staying in the business for those couple years. But I had a mentor maybe 5 years ago, and that was kind of the way he approached the business with me. And he said, look, if you can generate seller leads, you're never going to go hungry. So if you can go out there and have sellers call on your phone, and you can, you know, constantly be negotiating offers, following up, you know, getting new leads coming in the door. He's like, I have a huge ability to sell properties, and I was able to like leverage his buyers list back then before I really got serious about building my own. That allowed me to do it, what was, you know, the highest value thing that I could come up with at the time, and that was generate seller leads, generate the next deal. And I didn't have to like shift gears to turn around and then put like the selling hat on to sell the deal, because that's like an entire full-time job in itself. If you don't have a buyer's list, you're like putting ads on Zillow, you're putting ads on Craigslist, you're calling real estate agents in the neighborhood, you're cold calling, you know, you're getting desperate and you're hitting We Buy Houses in Google and you're calling all those guys on Google who are actually all a bunch of wholesalers anyway. And it's like, you know, you can turn into like this real desperate attempt to sell the deal you got under contract. Whereas when you have somebody that you can lean on, leverage their network, their position, their posture in the market already as somebody who provides that kind of inventory, you know, it's a matter of one email that Mark Scowron sends out and, you know, 2-3 offers come in, and something that's acceptable allows you to kind of like keep the focus on keeping that pipeline filled. And that was, for me, that was like one of the critical components being a consistent income out of the real estate business early on as a wholesaler.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Dan, because like, you know how it is, right? Like it's tough work in the sense of building both sides, right? So there's the seller side and the buyer side. Not a lot of people are good at nurturing, developing both sides because it takes a lot of work. And it's more than a one-man operation to develop both sides. So, you know, if you're listening and you just want to be a one-man entrepreneur or whatever it is, focus on the one side. Either get really good at finding sellers or get really good at finding buyers, and then really focus on one, because then you can find guys like us, sell them in co-wholesale, right? Like one thing I would say, like if you're not making $10,000 a month, co-wholesaling, you need a bigger buyers list, honestly, right? So you just got to determine what are you in the game for? I just want more freedom, whatever it is, right? Worry about the one side, I would say. Worry about either the sellers or the buyers. You know, if you really want to build it, like get an office, 2-3 employees, whatever that number is, right? And you want to build out both sides, then you're probably going to be better off finding a partner or someone to handle acquisition and then disposition, right? Because they're two separate beasts and they require a lot of work, like you said. So, yeah, it's one of those things you got to do soul searching. What am I in this for? It's not freedom. I'll focus on the buyer's list and then I'll just sell the deals. Or I'm just going to, like you did, like your mentor, find properties, you can sell them to me. So it's an important point, I think.
Nice. You did mention the acquisition lady and your disposition guy. So I've seen a few people, you know, I know it's kind of like sounding newbie focused or whatever, but where we're going with this, I think is important. You know, I've seen people who haven't achieved a high level of success or even a mediocre level of success. You know, they haven't consistently made $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a month in the business, and they're already like hiring acquisition people and disposition people. And I don't know if there's a case to be made for like systematizing and trying to outsource all those things right up front. I'm more of an advocate of, you know, mastering all the skill sets that are there before you kind of like, you know, try to duplicate yourself. Can you share your experience about timing when you started to build a team, put these other people in place so that it's no longer you with the sellers and buyers who's actually doing the interaction? Now, what time did that take? What skills did you have to develop first? Or did you just, you know, right from the beginning, put it together that way?
That's a great point. So for me, it took a couple of years where I was, you know, learning the ropes, doing everything, right? I think the way that I started out, I couldn't afford to hire anyone. And so I guess thinking about it, I was doing a lot of seller marketing without really thinking about the buyers. Once I had all the seller properties in, that's when I realized, you know, whatever, I had 8-9 under contract in the hood, you know, all over the parts of the city here, and I couldn't sell them. So then I kind of backtracked one day and I said, man, I really got to work on my buyers list hardcore. So then I kind of took a lot of time and spent like 60-70% of my day on building up that buyers list to give me confidence. So it probably took 2 years, you know, doing every part of the business, doing the marketing, getting the sellers in the buy side. The first hire I had was an admin, actually. To help with paperwork and stuff like that. And then after the admin, I had a VA just on little research tasks, pulling lists, that kind of stuff. And then acquisition came. It was my old assistant, actually, from my previous business. So I think, like, for acquisition side, you don't really need a salesperson in the sense of, like, you know, a hardcore sales. You just need someone that can connect with the seller and be very, like, consultative-based, right? Like, hey, how can I help you? You know, like, one of the biggest things when they when a seller calls in, we'll, ask, how can we help you, with this property? Because it's, we can talk 90% of the time and try to force what our agenda is on them. But if we don't listen to them and what they want to accomplish, like the truth is, same thing with the buyers, if you really think about it, most of your day really should be finding out what the other side wants. And then how can I help get you to where you need to be together, So acquisition side came first and then disposition came afterwards. I still do disposition actually just because I have like a personal connection with a lot of my buyers, right? I like them. We hang out, So that part of that's the part of the business that you should probably pass off at the last, or you should always have that, I think. When you're the guy or the gal running the show, you always have to sell the deal anyway. So you've built up those relationships with the buyer. So you're still, even if you hire someone else, they're still going to probably come to you because you've got that relationship with them. So it was admin, VA, acquisition, and then disposition.
Nice. How do you compensate each of those roles?
So acquisition is salary and then plus a bonus for each deal sold. And then disposition is just no salary, just straight commission based on the property that we sell. Based on the assignment fee, usually $1,000 to $2,500.
And what do you do, like 10% of the assignment fee? Or is that like a sliding scale on the...
So if it's like I don't know if it's really a percentage. It's usually like $1,000 to $2,500. So it's a larger assignment fee. It's case-by-case basis kind of thing. Most of it are in that like five... I said most of the assignment fees are like, let's say, between $510, $515 gross.
Yep.
So then the net to the sales guy is like $1,000 to $2,500.
What kind of bonuses and salary does it take to keep somebody on the acquisition side?
Acquisition, we've got goals. So there's a salary there. And then in addition, it's an extra $500 per property above five. So the first five is, whatever, because I think I can get five pretty easily just by myself, right? So in addition to outside of the five, so five through whatever, it's 500 per property that we acquire.
And that doesn't matter if you wholesale the deal out or say, if you buy it and do the rehab, you're just going to same kind of compensation, right, Mark?
Exactly. Whether it's a wholesale or whatever it is. I mean, really, so that's maybe a benchmark, but you really just got to ask whoever you hire. You're just going to have to ask them, hey, what do you think is fair? What, and then you got to come together with them. Some people might not be motivated by money. They just want lifestyle or experience or maybe not as much money. So you just got to find out what really motivates them. If it's money, then maybe they should be in the sales side. Just all sales 100% of the time. But, it's just one of those conversations you have to have.
It's interesting. So you don't necessarily reward the acquisition person on, the quality level of the deal. There's no real incentive there to have them get, let's say, a significantly lower price and, fight long term. Am I guessing that correct?
Yeah, so I give them parameters, right, in the areas where we got to be at. So they kind of, she'll know what parameters we got to be at based on the different areas.
Does your acquisition person go out to each property, Mark, or how does that work?
Typically, we'll do just with phone, fax, and email, actually. If we have to do an inspection, what we'll typically do is actually send out our buyer, potential buyer, to take a look at it for us, or our contractor if we're going to, if we're going to purchase it. It's almost virtual, right? That's where, when I started out, I was meeting every seller, meeting every buyer, going to every meeting, going to every title company, and it was just exhausting. So I kind of took a step back, and the way to handle this is you got to kind of architect it from the beginning, right? How you want it to look. But in addition, you really have to have a good standing rapport with your buyer, right? Because I really coach them in the sense of hey, Dan, you're going to take a look at this property. You're meeting with, XYZ with a potential seller. Just so you're aware, I presented you as, one of my contracting investing team. You're there to look at repairs. Please don't talk about price or conditions of the sale. Is that cool? So I should make sure to reiterate that, hey, less is more. You're there to just gauge the repairs. And obviously, and so they appreciate that because they know that we'll give them first crack, at the deal. So cause I think to get to that point, you got to have a good relationship with your buyer. I've got a lot of good relationships with those buyers, but it just makes it easy. It's more efficient. And in that regard, you can kind of virtual wholesale anywhere.
So have you ever had a buyer, shady, cut you out of the deal? Kind of stop answering the phone after the showing and the seller does the same thing? That would be I'm sure everybody listening is thinking Jesus, the buyer and seller are just the only ones that ever meet each other and you never even meet the seller. That could fall apart fast, no?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So lately, no. Last 2 years, nothing. Literally, no. Initially, yeah, I had a deal. Actually, so the buyer tried to snake me out of the property. I don't even know. He was trying to be a scammer. But I still think so. the challenges, one, I should have been there, but two, I should have coached him better. Three, I should have coached the seller better, right? So I presented him as my, you know, member of my team. He came in there and offered what I think it was 45 to her, 55 to him. So he's like, all right, 55 and no less, we'll take it. And she was like, what do you mean? You know? So she was taken aback. So yeah. So he left. So I came, she called me and was like, what's going on? So I was like, oh, I gotta defuse this. Well, this was the only time that it happened. But so I went back and said, yeah, you know what? I think he was just confused with other deals that we're working on. I mean, 45 is, you know, that's what it's going to be. So she legit said, this is her word. She's like, he offered me 55, but I don't trust him. I trust you. So let's just do the 45. You know what I mean? So I just met. So that was like when I was meeting all the sellers, right? So I actually met with her. That was a couple of years back, but that shows like the rapport, right? I mean, like I met with her once or twice and we were just like, you know, friends. So she was like, he offered me more, but you know, Mark, I trust you. Let's just do it at the 45. So I ended up actually still selling it to him. And I've sold him like more deals, you know, since then. That's the funny part. So I called him and like, you know, we went at it a little bit. But looking back, like, so, but it was crystal clear in my head that, okay, so you really have to, so it's on you. It's on me. You have to manage your expectations, you know, because you're right. I think when you send, you have a seller and a buyer, like people just naturally like to talk, right? And they're not like, not like they want to divulge information, but like put me and you in a room and we're just going to start blabbing like, hey man, I got this deal at this, this, and this. Hey, what do you need to sell it for? Yeah, I really need to sell it because this, this, and this. People just like to talk, right? They're not just going to sit there and be silent. So the key really is you have to manage your expectations and coach them. Hey, less is more. You're there just looking at repairs. I presented you as someone from my investing team looking at repairs. So stay consistent with that message. Is that cool? You know, that kind of thing. And really, since then, since I had that conversation, no snags at all. And then I'll do this, you know, we'll do the same thing with the seller. We'll present that, hey, we're bringing our buyer. He's just, you know, he's not going to talk about price and conditions. That's not what he does. He's just looking at, you know, layout, structure, what we're going to have to do as far as repairs, that kind of stuff. So it's just an extra conversation.
So we postured the buyers. Where did you go about building the buyers list? You said you were spending 60% of the day, and I know I had it written down here to ask you earlier when you mentioned that. Where or what do you do? What are the activities, tasks, and you know what three-step or five-step process could you give for listeners who maybe don't have a buyers list yet, Mark?
Yeah, so that's my bread and butter. Visit my blog at www.focusedonbuyers.com. So what I did is, you know, I realized like, hey, if you want a hot blonde, where are you going to go? You're going to go to a library or are you going to go like to, you know, I don't know, wherever they hang out, right? A bar, club, whatever it is. Not that you want that kind of girl, but whatever it is. So you got to go direct to the source. Like what I found out is just here in my market, like in Chicago, when I was starting out, everyone on Craigslist was just, you know, wanted to be wholesaler. There really wasn't like a legit cash buyer that was actually responding. It was just someone that knew a cash buyer. So I just wasted a bunch of time and I realized, you know, I got to go straight to the source. So my biggest thing is SkipTrace, you know, so you purchase one of those buyer's softwares. Ken Clothier has it. There's a couple out there. And so it just shows the cash transactions in the last 30 days in every county in the country. So for those, you just pull that list up. You hire a VA. They SkipTrace it. They find the phone number or the email. And then you just contact them and say, hey, Dan, hey, I noticed you bought a property at XX, you know, Lionsville. I'm just curious. I'm an investor just like yourself, and I've got some deals close to where you bought. I'm just curious. Maybe if you're rehabbing there, this project might make sense for you just because you're already there. Are you in acquisition mode? Are you buying any other units? You know, so then I would just, you call, you intro, you align yourself, tell them that you're an investor because they're busy. So you align yourself and then you just ask, hey, are you in acquisition mode? Because, you know, being an investor is all timing, right? Sometimes your buyers are buying, they want two or three at a time. Sometimes they're holding steady. So the key is really to get as many buyers, obviously, as you can on your list. And then from that point, you just data capture. You get their email, phone number, send them your info, text them your info, send them the deal that you've got. And it's really as simple as that, you know. So it's courthouse buyers. You can do the same thing with courthouse, right? Because if you go to a courthouse, they have to close within, you know, some places are 24 hours, 48 hours. So you got to close right away. So, you know, they're not messing around. But those are legit buyers. Go there and introduce yourself. Show up a half hour early. Stay a half hour later. That's when you can really mingle with them. And then buyer skip trace.
About how many minutes should that phone conversation take with that buyer? I mean, what would be too long of a time? You know, ideally, what number of minutes would you say for that buyer?
Yeah, so I think it depends on the person you are. So for me, I do it quick. I do it within like a minute or two at this point, or three, unless I'm selling a deal and I already know them. one of my coaching students, she takes like 20 minutes. And there's no right or wrong answer. Because the way that I do it is I try to, instead of doing a one and done, I think you really got to get them to engage, right? So the first intro call is just basically introduction, alignment, and data gathering, right? So I just want to get their info and have them engage with me and have them, your whole goal is to have them open the email or the text that you send them to look at the property, right? So it's a quick 2-minute phone call from me and then follow up the next day, right? So if I called you, you know, I do that, what I just said, and then I would gather info, I send you a text or an email, and then, you know, hey, Dan, based on the conversation, thanks, blah, blah, blah. Here's that property I discussed that's close to where you're rehabbing. Take a look at it. And then the next day, follow up, right? If a quick phone call or a text, that one could be maybe a little bit quicker because it's just like, hey, just reminding you to take a look at that property. Did you see it? Yes. Okay. If so, you know, then you call the buyer and have like an in-depth conversation. I just talk quick. So I realized for me, that's what works for me, right? So I can talk to a buyer within 2 minutes, find out where they're buying, price point, data gather, and move on. And I build rapport through omnipresence by sending them deals, emailing them, texting them, you know, that kind of thing. But I mean, you can take 20 minutes if you want to really nurture them, meet with them, you know, but you won't get as many in a day. But there's, you know, like I said, there's no right or wrong answer. You just got to determine kind of like what your personality type is.
Do you have a suggestion or a system for sorting them out and segmenting these buyers based on where they're buying, or do you have several different lists? I mean, what's your organization of buyers list look like right now, Mark?
Yeah, so that you just got to look at where you're selling, right? So you can do geographically, right? North leads, you know, or north side, south side buyers, west side buyers, east side, developers, rehabbers, landlords, owner-occupant cash buyers. So there's the same thing. There's no right or wrong answer. I break it up on regions, right? You know, so for me, you can post them up and get response, AWeber, one of those email autoresponders. And you can just do like a general blast with everyone. And then you can, so that's the way that I do it. I've got a general blast, not with everyone, but with a lot. And then I have like different areas geographically by counties, right? So there's Will County, DuPage County, et cetera.
Just to kind of shed some light on it, we talked about like the whole wholesaling game here. And I know the question burning on a lot of people's mind is, where do you get the leads? Where are you finding all these deals, right? That's what people want to know.
Deals, yeah. So that's the million-dollar question, right? And the answer really is anywhere and everywhere, right? Direct mail, signs, online leads, MLS leads, HUD deals, non-for-profits, co-wholesales. We do a lot of co-wholesales. You know, just align yourself with asset managers, listing agents. You know, they got access to pocket listings maybe. All the wholesalers are a great way to start, like me, you, Russell, right? Like align with us and say, hey, you know, you need help moving some properties, or here are some properties that we need to sell. Out-of-state investors that have properties here locally, you know, online. There's really so many sources, I think. I know like some schools of thought say, well, build one, develop that. They all work. They really do. You know, sometimes, you know, if you're doing a good job, you should accidentally do 1 to 2 deals a month, just accidentally, right? Just by working, you know?
Yeah, I guess, you know, so I'll ask the question, right? And I know there's no silver bullet, Mark, because I'm doing the same thing. It's referrals. It's, you know, I don't do many that are MLS listed or HUD homes myself personally, but, you know, all the usual suspects for direct mail. I'm doing the out-of-state owner, you know, the high equity absentee owners. I'm doing the foreclosure leads. I'm doing the probate leads. I'm doing tax delinquent leads. I'm doing pay-per-click Google advertising. I'm even doing Facebook ads, and so there's no real silver bullet. And, like, even though I know there's no silver bullet, Mark, when I ask you the question, I'm half expecting the silver bullet answer. I want you to be like, oh, yeah, I got this magical secret way, and I do 5 deals a month out of just the HUD homes alone, you know? And it's like a loaded question. I know a lot of people are expecting that same simple, loaded answer, which really doesn't exist. So it's like it's just a lot of hard work, it sounds like, is how you're finding
it. It really
deals,
does,
right?
And maybe it does for some people. You're right. I think you broke it down good, Dan. Maybe for some people that, hey, man, I've got a great source and it's whatever, right? These MLS deals, good for you. You know, sometimes I've had that where I've done 3, 4, 5 HUD deals a month and I'm like, man, this could really work. And then the HUD inventory went down, you know? So I think, so it's a little dangerous to rely completely on one strategy anyway. You know what I mean? So, because it's, you know, sometimes online leads are easier to get. Sometimes direct mail is a little bit better. So, yeah, you really do got to shock and approach it. But really, the key is, like, in your market, you just got to figure out what works for you, what works better. So if you're starting
out, absolutely,
test online, test direct mail. But obviously, one thing you should always do no matter what, because it's free, if you think about it, is just align yourself with other wholesalers, realtors, asset managers, you know, you can find the guys that are doing deals in the market and just align with them. You'll get, you know, you'll do cold sales that way.
Mark, I know we're kind of like watching the clock here a little bit, so I'm going to switch gears here and we're going to hit our questions that I ask every guest who comes on the show. And the first of those is who would you consider to be the most successful real estate investor / developer and why? It can be somebody, Mark, that you know personally, publicly, dead, alive. What I really want, you know, the important aspect of this question will be like why you believe they're successful.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot, honestly. Just with most of them would be like just in books that I've read from investors, autobiographies. You know, I think there's a couple. I mean, honestly, it's so divisive, but like Trump really like impresses me. Just, you know, even if his dad got in the game and he grew up with the development game, just what he's accomplished as far as, you know, the skyscrapers and in different markets and the branding side. I mean, just outside of his, you know, political views or any of that, but just for his business acumen, what he's done there, I think it's impressive. Everyone should be impressed by how he builds like the brand, right? Like the brand. So even before the presidential run, like the brand of Trump, right? Like how he built that. So I think that to me, that was so impressive and how he put everything together that way with the licensing. Yeah, I'm just really impressed.
Yeah, you got a great point. What a controversial day. I mean, we're literally recording this at a day or two after the election. And now the president-elect Trump, who literally like climbed to the top of our country there. And it's very charged topic, I know, for a lot of people. But I guess more people thought that, you know, along the same lines, Mark, and elected him in. So, yeah, but you got a great point. His name's been mentioned a couple of times for his question on the show. And you got a point. It's, you know, it's the brand. I mean, people are literally paying just to put his name on their developments and those developments as a result of that name. And, of course, the quality level and location, like a lot of Miami buildings and things like that. That he was not even actually the developer. He just licensed his name. And it's like his name alone was such a valuable commodity or addition to the building that they were willing to pay him to be a part of it passively. I mean, that's like crazy to get royalties
on
a
development
project.
Yeah, I mean, I know so many people get mad outside of his views and what he personally thinks, but just you can really learn from him business-wise, like how he like built his empire, went bankrupt, was in debt, you know, $900 million. And then fought his way back and, you know, refinanced all his loans and whatnot. Some of them went under there, you know, in Jersey with the casinos, but, you know, even with the golf courses, just how he's kind of navigated, right, from going to the skyscrapers to the casinos to the golf courses and built those world-class resorts. So I think, and, you know, mixed in with the branding, I mean, I think everyone should learn from that.
Mark, do you have two or three life-changing books for you? They could be, you know, in the realm of real estate, business, even mindset or success related that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, so I think, I do read a lot. And, you know, probably, you know, these answers might be the same for a lot of people. But I think, you know, years ago when I kind of got into that, you know, just thinking about getting into real estate and being self-employed. So Think and Grow Rich, right, was probably the first one. I was in like high school. Maybe it was outside of high school and college when I read that one. So that one just, it's a great book to kind of get you thinking that your burning passion, your burning obsession is normal, right? Because sometimes, you know, sometimes with this, you talk to friends or family and you're like, man, why are you so into this? So when you read that book, you're like, I'm kind of normal, or at least I'm normal to this subset group of people. So that one really like helped me out a lot. And then, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad even too. Like when first, after I read that one, I got into that one, Rich Dad Poor Dad. You know, that one maybe doesn't give you step-by-step what to do, but just like a mindset shift of the employee, right, the business owner, the investor. But I think that one was a good, like, eye-opener because I didn't know that stuff, right? And the truth is I went to high school and college. And they didn't teach me any of that stuff, you know. College, it's almost like they teach you – it might be different now, but to teach you how to work for someone, how to be a resource in someone else's dream versus, yeah, this is what you should do to start a business, right? And I'm sure there's probably entrepreneurship classes now. But so it's probably those two, really.
And finally, if you could share the crown jewel of wisdom with your 18-year-old self, what would that be, Mark?
Drink less? No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah, I think a lot of things. You know, I was reading, I really connected with this message. I think it was Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Bankfein, right? Actually, I think it was the same question, and I hate to steal it, but, like, when he said that, I'm like, it really hit me, like an uppercut. So they asked him the same question. And he's a billionaire now, right? Like he started from nothing, worked the company to be the CEO, and now he's a billionaire. And he said, I wish I would just tell my 18-year-old self to just stop trying to force and push everything and just be like Hitler-esque, you know, in the sense of just trying to get everything done and just be a little more relaxed and patient and still do everything, but more like in a less, you know, not in such like controlling where I got to control everything and I got to force everything and everything has to happen versus like taking a step back, still trying your absolute best, but just a little more patient, you know? So probably patience, really, you know? You just, as an 18-year-old kid or a 21-year-old kid, you don't even know what that means, right? You're just 100 miles per hour every day.
Yeah, you're right about that. I have a guy, I forget, every time I think he's about 25, maybe one of the guys who started with me in the Atlanta market, Austin. And that's one of the things that I've seen him, you know, have to quickly come to terms with was that like level of patience, you know, he's kind of like, hey, what's next? What's next? And it's like, we have this opportunity here now in the market, you know, residential real estate is really good. And it's like, I don't know what's next. And I have a feeling, you know, maybe he's looking for the answer of like a lot of us, like, you know, me when I was 26, 27, I'm like, oh, I want to build skyscrapers, you know, I want to be Donald Trump and da, 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 da. Like, never mind the fact that there was two generations of Trumps that patiently built skills and built up assets and learned lessons and did things in business that, you know, Donald Trump had like two generations of people patiently building that level of success that he kind of like walked into and was able to then leverage up, you know, even further. And I was, should have been listening to your original 18-year-old advice when I was 18. I should have drank less and maybe I'd have been a little more ahead. But yeah, watched, you know, I've watched that patience develop in my own life. Maybe it comes with age, but I know for people, you know, 18, 20, 23, 25, 27, especially getting the business and you see, you know, some of the guys in their 40s are making, you know, $1 million a year, $600,000 a year, making $100,000 on a deal. And it's like, I want that. I want it right now. And I think that causes a little bit of a problem, a little bit of a rift in a person's like mindset that kind of takes you and distracts you from the moment. And really your success for tomorrow and your future success is going to be built right now in the moment. So if you're not paying attention patiently, diligently, almost calmly and angrily at the same time working in the moment to like build the foundational things that are going to make your success tomorrow. And instead you're kind of in a rush and agitated. You're just going to be missing the opportunity because the opportunity exists now, whether you're 18, 20, 30, 60 years old, you got right now to build for a better tomorrow. So Mark, do you want to share some contact information? I know you do the podcast, you do the blog. Do you want to tell people where they can get some more information about you or reach out to you?
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. So, I mean, if you've got like co-wholesale deals or, just I got a blog at www.focusonbuyers.com, focusonbuyers.com. Go there. There's some info on me, some good blog posts that I popped up there. And, if you want to contact me for co-wholesales here in Chicago or, I've got a cash buyer mastermind that we do here too weekly, definitely inquire about that. It's basically all just on supercharging your cash buyers list. Mobilizing your buyers list.
Great episode here, Mark. I appreciate you coming on the show and taking some time out of your schedule to hang here with us this morning.
Absolutely, Dan. Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving email notifications of future episodes of the REI Diamond Show? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Also, are you interested in either buying a profitable real estate deal from me in one of our markets or presenting one of your deals or listings for me to buy from you? Either way, you can submit deals you'd like to sell or check out the deals I have for sale in Chicago, Atlanta, New Jersey, Florida, or Philadelphia by going to www.reidiamonds.com and clicking the link at the top of the page. Finally, if you have certain questions or topics you'd like me to discuss on a future episode, or if you have a guest suggestion, someone you'd like me to invite on the show, you can contact me directly by clicking on the Contact Dan link at the top of the page at www.reidiamonds.com. Thank you again for being a loyal listener of the show. Dan Breslin here, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.